Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakulskas, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
The old adage that everyone knows everyone's business in small towns is often repeated, but as is always the case, small towns hold secrets, even in small towns in Iowa. In Heather Gudenkauf's latest thriller, This Is How I Lied, Maggie Kennedy O'Keefe was a teenager when she discovered the body of her best friend Eve Knox in a cave near the hometown of Grotto, Iowa. Of course, there were suspects at the time, including Eve's boyfriend, but the homicide investigation eventually turned cold, and now, 25 years later, Maggie is a detective with the Grotto Police Department, and a new piece of evidence emerges as the murder investigation is reopened. Can advances in DNA finally provide an answer as to who killed Eve Knox? And the author, Heather Gudenkauf, who lives in Dubuque, joins me now. Heather, this setting is, Grotto, Iowa, is every bit as much a character as the people themselves in this book, the caves outside of fictional Grotto, Iowa. What inspired you to write a book and set it in this particular location?
Well, all my books are set in Iowa, and, you know, many people think that Iowa just has cornfields and soybean fields, which we do, of course, and they're beautiful, but we also have many other different kinds of landscapes. So we have the Bluffs and the Mississippi, and we have caves. And so not far from Dubuque, there is the town of Maquoketa, Iowa, and the Maquoketa Caves, which is a state park. And it's a circuit of caves that are absolutely stunning. And, you know, I've spent some time there with my family, hiked and the trails and gone through the caves, and I just knew one day it would be a perfect spot for one of my novels. And that was the inspiration behind the setting for Grotto.
And the name of the town, Grotto, I think of the Grotto in West Bend, the Grotto of the Redemption, but your town's fictional. How did you choose that name? Because I couldn't believe there was not a town in Iowa called Grotto yet.
Yes, yeah. You know, it's having to do with caves. Just kind of there's a relation between those words. And, yeah, so I just thought that that would be a good choice. You know, there's also, you know, there's just a mysterious sound to it, and it just seemed to fit my fictional town perfectly.
In 1995, when Eve was murdered, Maggie's father was the Grotto police chief. What evidence did the police chief or the police department have during its original investigation?
You know, there wasn't a lot. You know, that they didn't have some of the resources that we have today, and so they just had some more circumstantial evidence. So they knew that Eve had a boyfriend, and some people thought he wasn't good to her, and but there really wasn't a lot of information. There was also a drifter in town at the time, and things just really went cold. And you know, we see that today, or not today, but as much, but in cases from 25, 30, 40 years ago, that they have some evidence, but they just don't have the technology to figure it out at the time. And so I was really fascinated with these kinds of cold cases. The Golden State Killer, for example, after, you know, decades of that being such a mystery, it was familial DNA that finally led to the arrest of a suspect. And that's something I really wanted to investigate in the story. And then even in Iowa here, while I was writing the book, there was a case in Cedar Rapids of a 40-year-old crime and murder. And just recently, familial DNA was used to arrest and then eventually led to the conviction of the perpetrator. So really fascinated me, and it was something I wanted to dig into with my novel.
Well, and of course, I remember the Michelle Martinko case, and Jerry Burns was convicted late last year, early this year of it. And I knew as you had written this book, it had to have been written. I mean, you had to be well along your way before that ever happened. But, you know, since the teenage Maggie found the body and the victim's her best friend, how wise of a decision is it for her to be the lead investigator when the case is reopened?
Well, it wasn't, obviously. There is some conflict of interest there, of course. But, you know, and Maggie's circumstances. And, you know, as we get to know Maggie, there's always more to the story than we know. And she, you know, she had the time to do it. She was going off some of the heavy duty that she was doing. And she really was only supposed to take the new evidence to the state lab. But as we know in the book, she begins to dig a little bit deeper. And as she digs more deeply, she comes to realize that somebody wants to keep everything quiet.
A lot of the characters in the book have a lot of issues. There's mental illness, there's economic disparity, a pregnancy, and some other things I don't want to spoil. But how developed are these individual characters in your mind or on paper before the action even starts?
You know, it takes some time. I really sit with the characters for quite a while. I also, you know, keep a notebook, a physical notebook, as well as an online portfolio for each character where I'm able to jot down everything I can think of that might go into the story about the character, their thoughts, their feelings, their hopes, their fears, their physical attributes. And sometimes that information goes into the story, sometimes it doesn't. But it really helps me develop a fully formed character as I write, because it's so important, especially when dealing with complex issues like mental illness and disparity, that the character's motivations match their actions and vice versa. And so I really try to focus on the characters even more so than plot. I find that if you figure out what your character's motivations are, the plot tends to follow and leads us in the directions that we end up at eventually.
Do you do that for every character that appears in the book, even the one-offs, I call them, the people that just appear once and are gone? I mean, or does it have to be a major character for you to develop them that far?
Yeah, for that part, it's the characters that are more fully seen in the story. But, you know, sometimes as I write, characters that I think are going to be more present in the story aren't so much. And so sometimes I have those profiles still. Or as I'm writing, a character emerges as someone who's going to really take a lead in the story. And so then I have to make sure I do that same process. It's just a little bit belated when I do that. But yeah, for the major characters, absolutely.
The narrative flips between the past and the present and from various characters' points of view, but you chose to write Maggie in the first person. Frankly, there were a few characters you could have written in the first person. Why did you pick her?
I think she's the forefront of the story. I think, she is the one who is driving the action forward, and she has such a unique perspective into the story. She's the one who found Eve all those years ago, and she grew up in this town, and she's following in her father's footsteps and this new evidence. So she gets kind of that 360-degree view of life in Grotto. And so I thought it was important that we were able to really get into her thoughts and feelings and reactions to things. Whereas for some of the other characters, equally as important, but sometimes having the outside narrator speak for them is very telling in itself. And it's important, too, I think, when you do write in multiple perspectives, you really have to choose those perspectives carefully, because you don't want the characters to all sound similar or alike. So finding that right voice is really important. And, there's been projects where I've written a story all the way through in first person, and come to realize that really this character's story would be best told in third person. And so it really depends on the character and on the story.
When a cold case is investigated these days, advances in DNA provide a lot more avenues for the truth to be revealed, and not just for police, but for fiction writers. So how does this work with a small-town police department as opposed to, an LAPD or maybe even a Des Moines police department where there's a lot more resources?
Yeah, I'm fortunate. I do have a contact here in Dubuque in the police department who is so gracious and kind to be able to visit with me regarding these kinds of details. And so I'll email him and ask him, what would happen? How long would this take? And he's very forthcoming, very helpful with that. But I write fiction, And so, you know, it was very clear that, you know, a small town police department does not have all the same resources or budgets that perhaps other communities do. So there, you know, there is a difference there. But one thing that I think police departments do have, and we're fortunate, is, you know, they want the truth too, and they want, they will work hard to find out who the perpetrator was. They don't give up, and you know, it may take a long time, but you know, they want justice for the families and for the victim as well.
One of the characters' props, if you will, in the book is a copy of Colleen McCullough's book, The Thornbirds. Does that book have particular meaning for you?
It does. You know, when I was, oh gosh, I was probably 12, I was reading The Thornbirds. And if you're not familiar with the book, it's a pretty adult, racy novel. And I was probably 12 at the time, and I was in my room reading it, and my mom walked in. And she's like, "What are you reading?" And I kind of looked up from the book and said, "Well, The Thornbirds." She said, "You shouldn't be reading that." And I said, "Well, it's the second time I've read it." And so it's kind of, you know, that forbidden book that you know, really stuck with me over the years. And to my mom's credit, she said, didn't take the book away from me. And, you know, I was lucky to grow up in a home where we had lots of books, or I had a chance to get to the library a lot. And, you know, we all have those books that kind of stick with us. So this was my little homage to that book and Colleen McCullough.
Well, your mom's fortunate. It could have been Valley of the Dolls, right?
That's true. She might have drawn a line there. No, I don't think so. But, books that, you know, there are books in our lives that really become, you know, touchstones for different reasons, and that was one of them. So I wanted to include that in the book as well.
You live in Iowa, as we said, over near Dubuque. You set your books in Iowa, but the books aren't hyper-local or stereotypical Iowan at all, and you have readers all over the world. So is this a conscious decision for you to set them in Iowa but don't make them too Iowa?
Well, you know, yes, very conscious decision to set it in Iowa. I grew up here. I love it here. I think we've got fabulous communities, like I mentioned, a, you know, beautiful landscape, and I want to share that with the world. And, you know, I try to make my books as Iowa as possible. Maybe not stereotypical, hopefully, but from maybe some people who don't know Iowa as well as we do. But, you know, what I do want to come through, of course, my books are dark. They have a thriller element and crime elements to them. But what I really kind of hope shines through is, you know, that how great the people of Iowa are and through some of my characters and the beautiful landscape. And, it's something that in my small way, trying to share Iowa with the rest of the world.
And I'm a dog lover, and I appreciate that you set pets in every one of your novels. What inspired you to start doing that?
You know, I've always had a dog through most of my life, or pets, many pets. You know, I grew up in a house full of, there were six of us kids, and my mom and dad, and we had just about every pet under the sun at some time or another. So we had dogs, of course, a cat. We had gerbils and hamsters and birds and hermit crabs, and it was such an important part of my life growing up, and I just want to include that in my book. So in each of my books, there is some kind of animal that's kind of like a sidekick to the main character, or at least the family of the characters, and I try to get my readers involved with that. So often, before, as I'm writing a book, I'll put a shout out to readers and ask them to name a pet, or name it a dog or a cat in the story. And it's just another way to bring a little bit of my personality into the stories, as well as a piece of the readers.
It's fascinating. The book is just great. It's called This Is How I Lied. It's by Heather Gudenkauf. The book's available now wherever your fine books are sold. And I know you've got a few out there. This is the first time I've happened to have stumbled upon you in this particular genre and doing this gig. But I am so glad I did. And so I encourage everybody to go pick up a copy of This Is How I Lied. And Heather, thank you so much for joining us to talk about it.
Thank you for having me.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikalskis. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time. Trouble times.